The cross that stands on top of St. Elizabeth's Episcopal Church in Wakpala, South Dakota, is weathered and worn. Like the people, the animals, the buttes, all of creation on those plains, it must stand up to extreme. That of cold and heat, relentless wind, and unforgiving sun. But it was only after we had spent 7 full days of working and praying, eating and sleeping under the shadow of that weathered wooden cross that I even noticed it. Granted, much of the time we were scraping and painting, roofing and shingling and singing and watching out for rattlesnakes. But still, it wasn't until the close of our time on the Standing Rock Reservation that I noticed this cross. I think that this has a lot to do with the state of the church as we were leaving. Because by that time, we had scraped, primed, and painted this beautiful house of prayer, but without a longer ladder or some scaffolding, we could not reach the top where the cross was placed. So this old rugged cross stood out on top of this stark white church. And as it did, I was reminded of a couple of truths that we were taught over and over again on this trip to be with the Lakota people of Standing Rock. One truth was that despite the thoughtless and often brutal treatment that the Lakota people have received from the government of the United States, like that cross, they remain. Weathered and worn, carrying on their traditions and striving to teach the new generations what the Lakota way is. Given the history of broken treaties, of polluted land, of federal malfeasance, of institutionally taught racism, it is amazing to me that they persevere, and yet they do. The second truth, found repeatedly through story and conversation, is that the Lakota people understand today's readings, especially our gospel, more thoroughly than any people that I have ever met. For the Lakota, material possession can never take the place of human relationship. As you will hear from some of our youth that were a part of this trip, the Lakota understanding of possession and generosity is unlike almost anything that we practice here in the Bay Area. From their understanding of family that extends far beyond the dominant culture's focus on the nuclear family, to their remarkable willingness to share what they have even with us Washichu, it is clear that their treasure does not lie in what a thief comes near or in what a moth can destroy. Their treasure is found in communal life, in the support, nurture, and care of one another and of all who enter their circle. To experience this way of life was remarkable and moving. And to more fully tell this story, I would like to invite forward 4 youth of our parish: Michaela Hahn, Ellen Lempris, Vigo Hoyt, and Deirdre Feely. Michaela.
Going into this year's mission trip, I was nervous. I did not know what to expect. I knew about Indian reservation from history class, but I had no concept of what life would be like on the reservation. I knew that this mission trip would be very different from last year's trip to San Diego. First off, we were not working with children like we did last year. We were going to re-roof and paint both a house and a church. Secondly, our living situation was different. Last summer, we were based in Coronado, an island off the coast of San Diego, home to many vacationing families, and we would go out every day to different Head Start sites. In a way, because we were living in affluent Coronado, it felt like we were living in 2 separate worlds. However, this trip, we were going to live on the reservation, completely immersed in their culture. I was anxious about this. I was afraid I would offend someone. I was afraid that my preconceived notions about Native American culture would prevent me from truly experiencing it. With this in mind, I promised myself that I would keep an open mind at all times. After 2 days of traveling by plane and car, we finally arrived on the reservation. The first thing I thought was, wow, this place is beautiful. It looked like nothing I had pictured. There was so much land. I remember telling Deirdre that this place looked like the ads for Hidden Valley Ranch salad dressing. The church we were to work on was a hill separate from the community, where no one lived. That night, some members of the community made us dinner. We were introduced to Gladys and Margie Hawk, two elders of the community. It would be the first of many dinners to follow that we would spend with them. We also met some of their family members. Now you have to know that family in Lakota culture does not just refer to the nuclear family, but extends outward. So we met Anna, who was 15, Fiona, who's 12, Shania, who's 10, Dale, who's 16, Chelsea, who's 4, and Cole, who's 5. The next day, we began our work. Anna and Fiona, two of the girls we met the night before, came and joined us. Anna and I were paired up, and we started scraping the house. Right away, we hit it off. We started talking about basketball, school, and friends. A little into our conversation, she shared something very real and personal. She told me that her best friend was pregnant. I was taken aback. She continued to tell me about her friend. She told me that on the reservation, teen pregnancy is very common. I had barely met her, and she was telling me about her best friend's pregnancy. From then on, we hung out every day. Over the course of the week, I continued to learn more about her. By the end of the week, I felt like we had known each other forever. She had become a part of our group. Every day before she would leave, she would say bye to everyone, and everyone would stop what they were doing, run over to her, and give her a hug. She even stayed with us one night. I was amazed at how open she was with us. She shared with me personal and family struggles that I might not have shared with someone that I had known for years. I never knew it was possible to create such a deep connection so quickly, especially with someone who had been raised in such a distinctly different environment. I trusted and respected her. I admired her openness, her trust, and her strength. The amount of faith and love she shared with us made me think about my relationships and where my heart is. Like in the gospel, Anna taught me to be dressed for action and have my lamps lit. I thought back to my initial worries about this trip. If I hadn't promised myself that I would keep an open mind, then I would not have created such a strong relationship with Anna. Nor would I have been able to experience Lakota culture. I understand what Luke meant when he said, "Blessed are those slaves whom the master finds alert when he comes. Truly, I tell you, he will fasten his belt and have them sit down to eat, and he will come and serve them." Not only did I learn to have an open mind, but also to always have an open heart. My friendship with Anna taught me to always have an open heart so that at any moment I will be able to receive and share that love.
One thing that I realized in South Dakota was that when Lakotans think about treasure, they don't think of a materialistic object. They think of values, such as community, family, and culture. The first night that we arrived in Wakpala, we went to a powwow. This event demonstrated their culture through the brightly colored costumes, the authentic, beautiful dancing, and the rhythm of the drums. This was an annual event made to display their culture and also to bring the community together. This show was not for everyone to see. We were the only visitors. It was just so that the culture was shared through the generations. The powwow was beautifully orchestrated, and many hours as well as money was spent on it. We were told by Tony Bobtail Bear, a member of St. Elizabeth's who spoke to us, that the tribe came together and raised money for a year to make this event possible. and in 3 days, all of the money was spent. Money didn't seem to matter on the Standing Rock. This tribe treasures their rich culture and puts emphasis on keeping it alive and passing it on through generations to come. Before I left to go to South Dakota, when I thought of the word treasure, a mental picture of money and jewels came to mind. But after this trip, when I hear the word treasure, I think of a completely different image. Something that I can neither see nor touch, not an object. Now I see new treasures in my life here in Berkeley. Seeing the tight-knit Lakotan community, I see how each person has an impact on my life. It's interesting to compare the treasures that we value here in the Bay Area to the values of some of the people in Wakpala. Our values are the same, yet different. Our community comes together to help generations to come, while the Lakotans come together to practice old values that and keep rituals rich for future generations. As a community, we love to work together to modernize and make the world a better place for the future. We are proud to be urban and eco-friendly. These are treasures to our community. We want to make the earth a cleaner and better place. This value brings our community together. In Wakpala, they practice old values so that future generations can appreciate them to their ripest, and they do not let time damage the fullness of these values. This is the treasure to their people and what brings their community together. Even though these practices are old and not new, they are both used to bring people closer to our neighbors. Community is an important core value no matter where you go. But with the Lakota, I felt a strong sense of family that was beyond anything I had known. They showed me what my treasure truly is.
I am here today tell you about what I learned in South Dakota and my view on the Lakota Sioux comprehension of values. Jesus said that a man's greatest treasure is one that can't be stolen by thieves or destroyed by moths. It should be where your heart is. I think the Lakota people really understand this. They value family and friends much more than money or other things of physical value. When a Native American child comes of age, these people, who have very little, give away $5,000 worth of items. They'll give horses, quilts, and all sorts of other things. They give things that could be useful. The Lakota Sioux sense of family is very different than ours. They consider close friends family. They consider close friends their fathers, mothers, brothers and sisters. They care about these relationships so much that they would rather stay on the reservation than go to, say, the capital and get a better job. They can't leave their family. The average income per household in Wakpala, the village we're staying at, is $7,000 a year. One of the elders who came and talked to us told us that one man will make roughly $12,000 a year. This will be shared between two or more households. I went to a powwow, and one of the things that I really liked about what I saw was that when there was a dance, people would run out and toss money around the dancer's feet as a sign of respect. Then at the end of the dance, the supervisor would go around and pick up the money, which then be given to people who are in need. Another thing that really struck me when I heard stories about the Lakota Sioux people was how forgiving they were. A large amount of young Native Americans will volunteer in the military, the same military that destroyed their way of life 100 to 200 years before. I myself certainly don't think that I could do that. One of the biggest things I learned during my brief stay on the Standing Rock Reservation was that having friends and skills is much more important than having money. It's important to do something that you enjoy than to do something to get you money. Another big thing that I learned was that silence is okay. A Lakota child doesn't speak very much. When we were eating dinner, we made a great amount of noise. One of the elders said that if we were a Lakota, we wouldn't have talked at all. I tried being quiet and not talk all the time, but listen too. It was very calming and nice. When we left the Standing Rock Reservation, Father Rob, the priest who supervised us and helped us, told us that the people of the Lakota Sioux tribe were incredibly happy. They would talk about the work that we had done, and not a single negative word was said. It had never happened before. It was unheard of.
One afternoon, when our youth group was on the Standing Rock Reservation, Michaela and I were painting the bell tower in front of St. Elizabeth's with a local, Eugene LaFramboise. While we worked, he entertained the two of us with stories about Standing Rock. And one that really touched me was one that showed the unending generosity of the Lakota people. When Eugene's grandmother was a child, the town of Wakpala was in a valley with a creek running through the middle. Every house had a large garden, and they were all full of blossoming flowers and blooming fruit trees. During the Great Depression, poor white teenagers would come over from the neighboring town of Mobridge, which was off the reservation. They came wearing just torn jeans, cloth backpacks, and dirty shirts. They worked in the gardens of the Lakota all day, and in the evening, there was always a large communal dinner for everyone in the town. The kids from Mobridge would stay and eat, too. You could always find a meal in Wakpala during the Depression, regardless of your race or gender. Now, what many of us did not know was that the Standing Rock, as well as all other Indian reservations, was dirt poor, or is dirt poor. So for a small, poor community to be able to come together in a great time of need, such as the Depression, and help those who were hurting, was a very touching and remarkable thing. In today's reading, Isaiah tells the people of Israel that God wants them to rescue the oppressed, defend the orphan, and plead for the widow. Eugene's story is a perfect example of the Lakota's ability to serve others and perform God's will. In my life, I often become caught in a self-centered world where I forget the importance of helping others. One of the most important values of Lakota culture is generosity. And last week, when we were immersed in this generosity, it was impossible to be stingy. This forced me to think about what my treasures were and where my heart is. I think the Lakota know where their treasures are. To them, money has little value. They are taught to never become attached to it. They value personal relationships over material goods. Their community is closely bound with a strong sense of family, which is very important to them. When I spent time with them, it was clear right away where their hearts are. And honestly, I envy that. Another person I met on this trip was the 15-year-old Anna Chasing Hawk. She came to help one day, and Michaela quickly bonded with her. I was next, and we soon became close friends. She visited us every day, and our friendship continued to grow. On our last day on the reservation, Anna presented Michaela and I with two of her own dance shawls. Dance shawls are very expensive, and her giving them to us was a show of how much she valued our friendship. Receiving that shawl from Anna meant so much to me. In a heartbeat, I discovered where my own heart is. There on the reservation, having no concept of time, working where work was desperately needed, and helping people who had selflessly helped so many others, I discovered my treasure. And what I really treasure is not any different from that of the Lakota. Relationships, family, friends. Now that we're back, I hope I can continue to remember what my treasure really is.
The Lakota, like many Native cultures, find great significance in circles. For me, this trip from its genesis to this point has borne that out at every interval. For instance, over 15 years ago, a young priest named Mark Andrus led his youth from his parish in Virginia to St. Elizabeth's Church in Wakpala to paint the beautiful and rugged structure that we just finished painting. We, of course, now know him as our bishop, and in his office on the close of Grace Cathedral in San Francisco hangs a very large photo of this church. And as you may know, we were overjoyed that two beloved members of this parish, Margie and Father Bill Fay, were able to join us on this trip to Standing Rock. More than 50 years ago, they worked, lived, loved, and prayed with these steadfast Episcopalians. But what we realized when we arrived in Wakpala was that the house that we roofed, painted, and cared for was built for a young couple over 50 years ago who at that time had two small boys, and it was those very same Fays. As we painted and shingled, we were able to witness another circle come complete. As the first occupants of that home, the Fays, met and told stories with the next occupants of that home, the Schwarzes. We were able to marvel as Bill and Margie told stories and met and visited with numerous godchildren and their descendants. And in those moments, as the circles came back around, it was clear that the treasure of this world has nothing to do with hedge funds or pension plans. The treasure of this world, as the Lakota know so well, is shown in the care of the body of Christ, the love shown for widow and orphan, seen in the dance shawl and the close embrace. And now, forever for me, it will be seen in the cross of St. Elizabeth's Wakpala, weathered and worn, that still stands for all to see.